Hi, everybody, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengee. It's great to have you with us on a Monday as we kick off a new week. We're going to look back on the Players' Championship. There's plenty to talk about. We've got Scottie Scheffler winning, returning to number one in the world. We've got Jon Rahm pulling out sick. We've got Rory McIlroy complaining about his driver and maybe seeming like a guy who's had just about enough of being an administrator, shadow administrator of the PGA Tour. We've got schedule stuff to talk about. I mean, there's just so much going on in the world of golf, and some of it's on course, some of it's off. And then we're going to end the show this week with a conversation with one of my best friends in the golf world, Brendan Sweeney from the French Lick Resort. They have signed on to become the new host of the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, taking over for Victoria National starting next year in 2024. It's a five-year commitment, and they're adding that to the portfolio of tournaments that are held every year now at the Pete Dye course. They have three courses there at the French Lick Resort. And they've already got an Epson Tour event, which is tied for the biggest purse in the history of the Epson Tour. They bring in this event, and I love being out at French Lick. So I kind of just wanted to have Brendan on to talk about what all that means for the resort, what that means for the community, what that means for him personally. And it's a kind of a, I think, an unexpectedly emotional interview because Brendan's been involved with the resort for so long, and to see it grow and change, it was a really cool conversation. So I wanted to bring it your way as the end of the program. So let's start with the players. Let's start with Scottie Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler won the Players by 5 on Sunday, and honestly, it felt like he won by 10. After a couple early rough holes, everything went the right way once Minwoo Lee made a disaster of the fourth hole. Which, by the way, Minwoo Lee did the right thing. He tried to lay up to a good number because he didn't want to put the creek in play, and then hit one of the absolute worst 88-yard shots you'll ever see anyone hit, finds the water, and that was the end at that point. I mean, it still seemed like there was maybe some movement that could be had. Tyrrell Hatton was closing well ahead of everybody else, shot an incredible 29 on the back nine. I believe that is the lowest score ever in the final nine of the Players' Championship for anybody, which is pretty incredible. And that held up. That held up for the rest of the day because he finished in solo second on the back of that 29. And everybody else that had a chance kind of fell by the wayside because you had different points in the round. Max Homa was making a run. Deki Matsuyama made a run. Tommy Fleetwood felt like he made a run. Taylor Montgomery made a run. And Montgomery and Homa made a mess of 17. And then Deki made a mess. What was it? A 14, I think. And they just all cleared the decks. And there was nobody in the way for Scottie Scheffler, who then birdied 5 consecutive holes in the middle of the round. And that was it. It was over. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. He was up a zillion. And then he, just as quickly after turning it on, dialed it back. And only made really one mistake the rest of the way, which was his tee shot on 14. Wound up on the edge of one of those deep grass bunkers just before the bushes. Fortunate for him, it wasn't in the bushes. Didn't lead to an unplayable. Took his medicine, did what he had to do, dropped his shot, okay, whatever. And then just played very smart golf the last few holes. The really only potential drama that would have been there was an illogical, ill-timed, poorly struck shot to 17. Nope. Hit it right exactly where you needed to put it for a Sunday pin to get it close. He probably would have liked making that birdie putt, but it didn't really matter. As soon as he hit the green, he knew the tournament was over because then on 18, he blasted it about 75 yards to the right of the water, and he still managed to make 4. He still managed to make the par putt to finish the tournament, win on 17 under, 271, beat out Tyrrell Hatton, and now he's won twice this year in designated tournaments. He's won Phoenix. He's won the Players. He's the third guy in the history of the PGA Tour. Obviously, 50 years worth of history here, really. But the third guy to have won and been at the same time the Players and the Masters champion. Jack Nicklaus did it in 75. He won the Players in 75 and 76 before the era of TPC Sawgrass. But he was twice the reigning Masters champion and reigning Players champion. Tiger did it once when he completed the Tiger Slam. And then you've got Scottie Scheffler, who is on one of those heaters. And I don't know where to classify it. I mean, we often tend to think of trying to find comparison points between what players are doing now in the past and what you might have seen before. There, I've increasingly been convinced that there are a lot of different paths players can go on. And I think Brooks Koepka was really the first person that made me think about that in a true context. Because I'm always looking for a historical analog, right? I think that's people's tendency, is to try to equate it to something they've seen before. But Brooks Koepka is truly unique in that regard, I think. I mean, he had his run of four majors, his body let him down, lost it. Who knows if he'll ever get it back? That could be the end of it. You've got, in Scheffler, a guy who didn't win in his first 70 starts and has won six in his last 27. And the six that he's won are huge. It's not like he's winning dud events. I mean, he wins the Players, wins the Masters, wins Phoenix with its best ever field, wins the WGC match play, wins API. He's not going anywhere. I mean, this is real tough stuff that he's doing. And he makes it look so simple. He looks so calm out there. And I think that the tour probably is like, well, that's not as marketable compared to McIlroy or Rahm, who get super emotional, are very outwardly both confident and just tell people what they're thinking and feeling on their face. Scotty's not that way. He doesn't strike me as a guy that really likes to show his emotion. And he wants to kind of keep that quiet confidence to himself. And other people have pointed this out. I'm not the first person to point this out. But it's definitely because of his faith. I mean, he is definitely a deep Christian guy who seems very comfortable believing that he's out of control of a lot of things. And I don't think, I do think that is a fairly unique belief in modern golf. Because there's so much that you can control now. The equipment is great. You can dial it in to exactly where you need it, despite Rory McIlroy's driver problems this week and the last several weeks. You can find the kinds of things that need to be in your bag that make you feel like you can do what you want to do when you want to do it. And it's so good, the equipment now, that you can pretty much play golf how you want, and you're not going to get punished for it. And there are courses where you maybe can't do that as easily, and this is perhaps one of them. But generally speaking, the equipment is so good and the top players are so capable and they're so dialed in. They know themselves very well. They know their tendencies. They know what they can and can't do. That you have to feel like at some point, if you're a top player, I'm in total control. I can do everything I want to do. And Scheffler seems very comfortable saying the opposite, that he isn't in control, that I guess God's in control. And that he's just going to control, do what he can do. And that means he's going to play his best golf. He's going to take it easy. He's not going to freak out. And hopefully at the end for him, that means a good result. And I think that is a very smart, and I don't think it's trying to be smart. I just think it's a very good way to look at playing professional golf. Because we talk about it when I talk about sports betting or golf betting and do modeling and stuff like that. There are only so many things numbers can tell you about golf. And there are only so many things that you can do as a golfer to control the outcome. And the only things that you can do are your own. Mitigate losses, be aggressive when you need to be, and execute. Have a good game plan. Don't lose your mind out there. Make good decisions. Those are the things Scottie Scheffler does really well. He doesn't make stupid mistakes. And I think having Ted Scott on the bag is a tremendous help to him because they are of, I think, similar mindset about faith and maybe just have similar personalities. But I think their look at the universe is very helpful to Scottie Scheffler because they can just say, look, we're going to do what we can do and we'll see how it all works out. And if it works out, it does. If it doesn't, that's okay. And I don't think, and certainly having a 5-shot lead, he didn't have to ever press, right? Once he got through 12, the worries were over. Now it was a different mindset. It was, okay, now I am in control. Now I just have to do the simple things right. I don't have to go reaching for anything. I don't have to impress anybody anymore. I'm going to win so long as I don't screw this up. And He did that. And that really impressed me that he could go from, I got to put the pedal down, to, okay, let's throttle this thing gently. Let's get this bird down on the runway and do it very easily. Let's not do anything silly. No stunt pilot stuff. Here we go. And he got to 17. He did the right thing. And he still was relatively aggressive. I mean, it wasn't, he wasn't trying to play so passively that he could lose his mindset. He still played great golf. It just wasn't necessary to make putts at that point. And he talked about that being on 17 tee with a huge lead. He probably saw or knew about some of the other guys who took a bath on 17. And they asked, I don't know who asked him, but someone asked him, what was he thinking on 17 tee? Because really, that's the last obstacle. After that, it's, you know, you can blast it to the right forever. If you have a five-shot lead, you can chip it. You can practically play the hole with putter and win the tournament. But you can't putt it onto 17 green. So he said, oh, well, I was thinking, please, please hit the green. And he said, when we were standing there on 16, Minwoo had his birdie putt. We were waiting. Got to watch both shots go in, right? And you saw Cam Davis, and Tommy Fleetwood. And he said, you saw Cam kind of hit it long and left, and Tommy looked like he hit his, and it came up short. The wind on that hole was pretty much straight across. It would kind of help, kind of hurt, and it was bouncing back and forth. And when you have that much wind, you have the grandstands and all those variables out there, it's a really, really hard shot. And I just hit mine exactly how I wanted to. And I was very relieved when it hit the green because you're not really in control of what the ball does up there. You can only hit the shot and hope for the best. Unfortunately, mine landed on the green and stayed there. And even in that, he talks about not being in control. And it's going to become a cliche for him specifically that you only can do what you can do. And he's right. I mean, cliches are they exist because they're partially at least based in truth. But it just the remarkable attitude that he has. And I tweeted about this today after thinking about it this morning. And I really do feel like Scottie Scheffler is kind of the next the modern iteration of Billy Casper. And some of you listening have no idea what I'm about to talk about. Some of you are going to be like nodding your head. Yeah, that makes total sense. Billy Casper was a prolific winner on the PGA Tour. He doesn't get the respect that his record should command. And I think that's because he did it in an era with golfers that were much more emotional, much more bombastic, that just talked more. I mean, you had Arnie, you had Gary, you had Jack. I mean, Billy Casper's book is The Big Three and Me. That's what the book title is. And he really should have been The Big Four because he won, what, like 50 times on the PGA Tour. And he won multiple majors. And he's just a guy that I got to know him a little bit. I worked for Billy Casper Golf about 10 years ago, about 2013, 2014. And he was obviously doing appearances with the company. His name's on the company masthead, and obviously no longer the case. They've been sold to Troon, and it's different than it used to be. But when his name was still there, he would come and do appearances, and we went to a series of meetings, and I went with kind of this national team, and we would just have conversations every now and then. And what I really loved about talking to Billy Casper was how, in the nicest, in the best way, how self-assured he was. Because I think it, like Scheffler, it was largely rooted in his faith. He seemed convinced and then reinforced that conviction based on his success, that it was all in God's hands, that God was going to take care of it, and that he could just do what he could do, and he would be a vessel for God, whatever that meant to him. And that worked out tremendously well. And he did things extremely well as a golfer, but nothing particularly flashy. They just were really good. And I feel like Scottie Scheffler is that kind of way. He doesn't feel like he has to reach. He doesn't have to rear back and hit it farther all the time. He doesn't have to go searching for putting. He doesn't have to reach for a score when he's behind. Like he just has a very steady attitude toward life, toward golf, and the acceptance that you can only do what you can do and then see where that leaves you and don't get too worked up about the results. And in a weird way, that works. Because if you're not, if you believe in yourself, if you believe in what you've been given and what you've cultivated, then you don't worry. You don't, oh, I'm a fraud, or I'm an imposter, or people will see through me, or someone can beat me. He knows he probably could get beaten, but that when he plays the right way, he's really hard to beat. And that confidence, that faith-derived confidence, is hard to stop, because there's no reason for him to stop believing in God. There's no reason for him to stop believing in what he's been given and what he has cultivated. So he has no incentive to change, no incentive to chase, no reason to think that he can't just keep doing this for a while. And eventually, yes, I mean, history happens, you get older, your life changes. Maybe his worldview changes just a little bit. But I don't get the sense of, like, when he and his wife Meredith are going to have children, like, he's not going to handle it well. I think he's a 20-something guy going on 30-something who he kind of sees through the matrix, you know, sees the ones and zeros in the matrix. And that if he just kind of lets it happen and does his best, it's going to probably be okay. And I think that works. And for that reason, I don't think he's on like a David Duval kind of run, where Duval won, 11 times in 33 starts or something insane. I mean, he's won 6 in 27, so it's not even like that kind of Duval run. But I do believe that Scheffler is kind of on this longer-term trajectory of once it clicks, once you believe in what you've got, and that steadfast belief will carry you, it's really hard to shake. It's really hard to shake unless something just tragic happens, and I hope that doesn't. So I'm very impressed with Scottie Scheffler, and he may not be the most captivating to watch in terms of how he handles himself from tee to green, but he's a cerebral player. He's a faith-based player, and we don't have a whole lot of those, I don't think, that are this great. And I'm very interested to see, now that he's won 6 times, he's won Masters, he's won a Players, his game works everywhere, he's obviously riding high on confidence, what can't he do? I firmly believe he could win the Masters again. Why can he not? He could easily win a PGA Championship. He's won a tournament like this. This is as close to the PGA Championship as there probably is on the PGA Tour. Obviously, win a U.S. Open. Almost did that last year. Maybe the Open, but he knows how to keep the ball low. So I just don't see where his game cannot travel. The only things that are going to stop him are life changes, tragedy, or injury. And if none of those things happen, I don't think he's going to get in his own way. And it's wonderful to watch. It's really fun to watch. And it is really cool to also to try to transition a little bit to Rory McIlroy's equipment issues. But it's really interesting to see the top three players that we have now. And they're so clearly the top three players between Rahm and McIlroy and Scheffler. I think you can make the argument right now it's really a two. I mean, Rory's done some great things in the last 18 months. But I think right now, if you were trying to do this moment ranking, you'd have Scheffler, Rahm, and then a pretty significant dip to McIlroy, and then an even more significant dip until you get to, like, Homa, Cantlay, those kinds of guys. And then an even bigger dip, and you get into, like, Tyrrell Hatton, Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, kind of guys like that, Xander Schauffele, that are hit and miss. These boys ain't missing right now. They may not hit, but they aren't missing. And Rahm and Scheffler maybe are going to be an interesting rivalry because they are fundamentally different guys, but we'll see how the year proceeds. And hopefully John Rahm's feeling better. I had to withdraw from the tournament. Said he was feeling ill. And Scheffler still won this tournament, by the way, playing slow as heck golf. Even, I mean, he's not very quick, but even slower because him and McIlroy were playing as a twosome for the second round, which was probably not ideal, and still managed to make his rally. And he was playing with Rory, who didn't play great at all. And it doesn't matter to him what's going on. He's in his own world, and nothing seems to faze him competitively, which I love. Now transition to McIlroy, who played really poor golf at the Players. Could not get off the tee very well. I mean, he just made bad swings, and they didn't result very well. And after Thursday, I think there's some element of frustration in this. I don't think he really wanted to say what he said, but he did say it. And that's unfortunate, but maybe he'll back off of it at some point. But after the Thursday round, he said, he basically complained about his driver and said he wasn't very happy with it from TaylorMade, and he went to their Stealth 2. I guess he used Stealth 1 last year. Obviously had a great year, but he was worried that the trampoline effect, the characteristic time test, which is how long ball stays on the face of your driver, that it could fail with the Stealth 1. So he switched to the Stealth 2, and he didn't seem particularly pleased by it. And he said, quote, "I went to that new driver at Riviera. It's just not, yeah, I wish I could use my driver from last year, but I can't. Just because you use a driver for so long and it starts to get a little too," he's basically saying trampoline-like, "it basically wouldn't pass the test, the CT test. These driver heads are so finicky, it's hard to get one exactly the same. I'm obviously trying my best, trying to get something that's as close to what I had last year," which apparently he loved. Yeah, just struggling a little bit off the tee the last couple of weeks. And he's been trying to switch between heads, and he was asked about that. He said the one that he's been using at the Players is as close as he's gotten to the right thing that he wants. And he said, obviously, that there's a part of the user error in there. Well, he says there's quite a lot of user error in there as well. And the reason it sounds like McIlroy made the switch is because the PGA Tour was doing CT testing. And so I didn't even want to take the chance. I just was not comfortable knowing that it could fail. Doesn't look good on me. Doesn't look good on TaylorMade. And that is very interesting to me because of the ramping up of testing equipment on the PGA Tour for characteristic time, particularly on the driver. And they have been more vigilant about it this year. And players don't want to fail. I mean, didn't you have a Xander Schauffele failure or should have failed or something like that? And that didn't go very well. You're like, well, is Callaway making hot drivers? And they weren't. It's just that you beat a driver in the face right in the center often enough, and these guys obviously they hit the center way more often, and two, they hit them way more often than you and I ever would. And eventually, it just thins it out. I mean, it's just, if you hit metal enough times with a hammer, it's going to thin out. Well, if you hit something at tremendously high speed over and over and over again, that's bound to happen. And so, you have to make these changes. Well, McIlroy didn't have like a backup stealth head that he loved, so we had to go to the Stealth 2. Well, apparently didn't get the head that he wants yet. Or just didn't get something that he likes yet. And I have heard some reports, some complaints about the Stealth 2, that maybe it cracks a little too easily in the face and stuff like that. I have no verifiable data about that, so I don't want to speculate too much. But if it's not being particularly well-received by McIlroy, who's a really great driver of the golf ball, I can draw some conclusions, especially because he's a guy that is pretty candid about his equipment. I mean, he talked about it this year, why he went to try some Vokey wedges and play them in tournaments, and that he arranged for himself some more flexibility in terms of the number of TaylorMade clubs that he has to play. So obviously he's comfortable with that relationship, and TaylorMade makes great drivers, at least they tend to. So he just hasn't found that thing for him. And at the same time, I feel like, I just feel like maybe part of this little run from McIlroy is that he wants to go back to just being a golfer, that he's finally worn himself out from being the face of the PGA Tour and being the guy that kind of instigates and ribs the folks at Liv, particularly Greg Norman, that he just, I mean, he's in a huge battle right now. He's clearly one of the best players in the world. But also, John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler are not interested in the minutiae of the PGA Tour the same way that he is. They are interested in playing golf and really not particularly worried about the money or the schedule or any of that type of stuff, which McIlroy's clearly invested himself in. So I think he just wants to go back to being what he once was. And I don't think he's there right now. I don't think he's happy playing golf right now. And I mean, when he plays well, yeah, I mean, you'd love that. But it, I don't know. It just feels like there's a lot going on. And he said, I'd love to get back to being a golfer. Look, it's been a busy couple of weeks, and honestly, it's been a busy sort of 6 or 8 months. But as I said at the start of the week, everything has sort of been announced now. The wheels have been put in motion. So it should obviously quiet down from here. And then was asked the follow-up, has it just been hard to focus on being a golfer? He said, yeah, it's the time management. The golf out here, that's fine, but it's just more the time at home to make sure you're getting prepared, to make sure that you're getting everything you can make sure that you're doing everything you can to be ready when you show up to these weeks. That's me where I've maybe sacrificed a little bit of time with some of this other stuff. As I said, I'm ready to get back to being purely a golfer. And he'll get there, I think. But as anyone who's ever done like a huge project, whether it's for work, for life, whatever, you build yourself up, you put in a ton of time to it, you do it. Hopefully you did it well. Hopefully it comes off well. But even after that, you're drained. And depending on the thing that you're doing, you're drained for a little while at least, where you're like, oh, I put in so much effort. I just need to take some time away and just veg, not think. And maybe that's where he is right now of, you know, the time inside the ropes. Hey, I mean, he's still one of the best golfers on the planet. But that those little hours here and there where maybe he's on a Zoom or in a 7-hour board meeting at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, those hours add up, because you need time with your family. You need time to prepare, not just to play golf. And if you can't do those things, then you're just not going to be as good. And I think that does lead to some of what he said about the driver coming out as frustration of, well, if he could have spent the time to test driver heads and to get everything together that he needs to get done, maybe he would have one or two heads that he likes already, instead of having to worry about a CT test at Riviera where he needed to make a switch, and now he's just hunting and pecking because he doesn't have exactly what he wants. He had something he loved. Now he doesn't have that. Well, if he could put in 5-10 hours, a whole day, to test drivers and driver heads, maybe he can do that. And maybe that gets him back to being a little bit more confident in what he's swinging and playing a little bit better. I don't know. But I do think that has taken a toll, and he's obviously indicated as such. But at the same time, you also want to, I don't think I want to just give him a pass on that, because one, I think a lot of us in the media give him a pass for pretty much everything, because he's a very likable guy and he's very engaging. But at the same time, you can't just say, okay, well, it's the driver's problem, and yeah, it's some of me too. So it's got to be, and then allude to not having the same kind of time commitments that you had to have to get the schedule to where it needs to be. And I'm sure there's still going to be more work to be done there. I don't think he's completely done with that. But if he can put in some hours here in the next few weeks, and he's going to play the WGC match play, he's not going to play the Valero Texas Open. He talked about that. He said he wasn't particularly fond of that last year. So just the match play. And if he can just put in the right number of hours and get the right amount of rest, mate, I mean, obviously, then you get to the scaries of that being for the career Grand Slam. And every single year, it feels like McIlroy at the Masters steps on his own foot on Thursday morning, and it doesn't go well. But if he can get past that first round, who knows? Who knows what can happen? If you look at a betting market, if you're into that kind of thing for the Masters, he's the third favorite now, because it's very evident that Scheffler and Rahm are the better players at the moment. Well, if you level everything out with time commitment wise and you give him the time to prepare, maybe he'll surprise some people. So that all said, I think McIlroy at times almost looks for excuses, almost looks for things to kind of acknowledge didn't go well and find something to offer a little bit of a mental crutch. And maybe Scheffler will go through that, but he's not going through that right now. Everything is clicking. He's got nothing to worry about. Rahm, not everything is clicking. He was playing great. Now he's not playing as great. He's playing great for stretches, but not four rounds. So the confidence advantage that Scottie Scheffler enjoys over Rahm and McIlroy, who are playing phenomenal golf, that even makes him a little bit better of a player, and frankly makes it scary for what he can accomplish this year. All right, enough about the players, enough about professional golf. I want to talk and share with you the interview that I did late last week with my buddy Brendan Sweeney. Brendan and I have known each other, probably a decade. And we've gotten to know each other better over the last probably handful of years. And his work at French Lick Resort, player development director. And we just have had so many good times playing golf and getting to know each other. And I've gotten to know French Lick Resort as a result, and so many of the great people there. And become, frankly, invested in the resort and, to a degree, the community in French Lick in Southern Indiana. And for them, the resort, this latest news that they are going to be the home for the next 5 years, starting in 2024, of the Korn Ferry Tour Championship is a big deal. It's a great opportunity for Southern Indiana to get to watch the next wave, the future of professional golf as they come through the Korn Ferry Tour. It's an opportunity for those communities to get a huge financial injection for people coming to watch the tournament, participate in the tournament. It's also a chance to help so many communities of people, and there are many communities that are struggling in Southern Indiana. And Brendan's been there long enough to see the investment of the Cook family, who owns the resort and has put, $500 million, probably more than that now, into the resort to bring it back to where it once was a century ago. And so we talked about this last week of just, hey, let's talk about the Korn Ferry Tour Championship and what that might mean for French Lick, and in addition to the Epson Tour event and all that stuff. And the interview was, it was exactly what I thought it was until it wasn't. And I'll let you figure that part out at the end. And I'm not trying to build it up too much, but it was a really enjoyable conversation to have with a friend, and we just happened to be recording it. And I think that we often kind of don't appreciate the emotion that goes into something that you work on and something that you build up, and you see the fruits of your labor over time, or maybe you just see them suddenly. And it was pretty powerful to me. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Brendan Sweeney from the French Lick Resort. Brendan Sweeney joins us from the French Lick Resort. The French Lick Resort is one of my favorite places. We talk about it all the time on my socials, on this network, anywhere you can hear me talk about French Lick, even in private. I've sent a whole bunch of groups to French Lick over the last few years, and it's because I love going there. But the Korn Ferry Tour is about to experience the French Lick Resort, because they are the new home of the Korn Ferry Tour Championship. United Leasing's involved with that, and they have moved the event over to the French Lick Resort and the Dye course there from Victoria National, which is not too far away, hour and a half away in Indiana. So, Brendan, how did this come together, and what's the feeling for the resort that they're going to have the culmination of the Korn Ferry Tour season now?
Hey, Ryan, thanks for having me on, buddy. Good to see you, always, as always. And it's been too long. We got to get back as soon as possible. The season's about ready to get fired up here in Southern Indiana. So, yeah, great news came out last week. Golf Give Back is the charitable arm of the Southern Indiana group that put this together. Starting in 2024, French Lick will be the host site of the Korn Ferry Championship, presented by United Leasing and Finance, in Evansville, Indiana-based company. They held on to it. They've been a sponsor down there for 12 years at Victoria National. And at the end of this year will be the last tournament that Victoria National will be hosting with the Korn Ferry Tour. And fortunately enough, we have a lot of ties in Southern Indiana. Joe Bezozo, one of our directors, is from Evansville, and he's tied in with these guys. And they came up to him and approached him on it. And we brought it around a round table, and it's just a win-win for everybody. I mean, we have the facilities. We have our, you know, Pete Dye Golf Course is going to be the championship course that they'll be playing on. But on the flip side, we could use our Donald Ross Golf Course, as well as our nine-hole Tom Bendelow Golf Course for corporate entertainment during the championships. And we have the facilities. We have over 800 rooms. So we'll probably block out the West Baden Springs Hotel for sponsors and players. And then everybody else can stay over at French Lick and the Valley Tower Inn. So, yeah, we're excited. It's our next logical step without actually hosting a PGA Tour event. This is like right in our wheelhouse. And it's a five-year commitment. So we've committed our time and our resources to the Korn Ferry Tour. And we are so excited about United Leasing and Finance, as well as the charity for Golf Gives Back. Golf Gives Back is a educational 501c3 that supplies meals and books and clothing to the less fortunate people in Southern Indiana who need the assistance. The kids, it's all about the kids. And you know, Ryan, we've spoken before about the history of modern day French Lick, and when the Cook Group came down in 1996 and started working on the West Baden Springs Hotel, one of the main factors that stood out about rebuilding this community was Orange County, Indiana, where we're located, had the highest unemployment rate in the state of Indiana. It was somewhere hovering around 26%, so it was god awful. But with that, we've given a lot to charity, and we've given a lot back to the community. And now with Golf Gives Back, this opens up our umbrella of hope. So we'll be going from Louisville, pretty much the I-64 corridor, straight across to Evansville. So probably looking at about a nice footprint of about 150 miles of us helping out people just through golf. So we're excited about that. But that's not the only championship we have coming this year. So we have our annual Epson Tour championship as well. So, yeah, we have a busy summer coming up, tied around with professional golf. So it's a fun place to be right now, and you'll be up there soon enough. So,
and the Epson Tour commitment is really awesome too, and because you guys have, well, now tied for the biggest purse in the history of the Epson Tour. And you guys got behind this event. You moved it from the Donald Ross course, where you had it the first several years, to the Pete Dye course. Home was kind of representing an upgrade for the tournament, purse-wise and facility-wise, even though the Ross is amazing. But the facilities of the Dye are tremendous. But the good work that has come from this tournament has meant a whole lot to Habitat for Humanity in the area as well. So, I mean, as you talked about, yeah, it's all about the kids, but you guys are actually doing it in terms of the charitable impact for both tournaments.
Yeah, it's great. And then, you know, prior to that, or another one of our beneficiaries of the Epson Tour is the Riley's Hospital for Children. And for, I don't know, we've hosted three senior LPGA championships. And prior to that, there were five Legends championships. And over the, you know, the past 9-10 years of dealing with the LPGA, not only with the Epson Tour, but with the senior LPGA, one of our big benefactors was the Riley's Hospital for Children, which is similar to St. Jude. There's 92 counties in the state of Indiana, and Riley's Hospital for Children is headquartered in Indianapolis. And over 300,000 kids go over their threshold every year. And we've been very proud to be with them. But on a personal note with that, you know, we always had the kids go up and introduce the players. They're not only the Epson Tour, but with the senior LPGA, and seeing those kids grow up over the last 9 years, we saw, you know, children become young adults, and not only, you know, to see how they struggled through life through all the operations they have, but how they've excelled as not only people physically, but spiritually, and really come about. So it's an emotional thing for us. and me as a dad and you as a dad can realize that how fortunate we are every day to wake up every day and have healthy children. But to see these kids go through what they do and not complain at all is really a gut check for us. And that was really a great thing. And we will continue to have our relationship with Riley's Hospital for Children. So
for you guys to kind of reach out to the Korn Ferry Tour or reach out through the event, how does that conversation get broached? And what is that? Kind of, does this kind of start as a wave? Does it start as a trickle? I mean, how does it build up from, hey, we might want to come here to, okay, now we're coming here for 5 years?
Great question. So I started back in 2009 or 2008 with French Lick. And my job as a player development ambassador, I would say, is go out and find opportunities. And I'd have to say 12 years ago, I was invited to go to the web.com championships at Daniel Island, South Carolina. So it really started back then with our interest, not only in the Korn Ferry Tour, but other aspects of the professional golf world. The Victoria National was it's located in Evansville, Indiana. Victoria National was a private golf course up until about 3 years ago. And then the Dormy Network came in and purchased the Victoria National. And through that, they made the decision that, you know, they weren't really on board with the Korn Ferry Tour. And United Leasing said they really enjoyed the competition and the players and everything else, and they wanted to keep it in Southern Indiana. Well, there's only a few other places that could really house this, and still be within the footprint of Evansville. We're located about an hour and 20 minutes, door to door from Evansville to French Lick. It's just outside of their TV market. So that's one aspect. We're in the Louisville footprint. So we sort of cross over as far as a broadcast footprint goes. It just came about where we could have a charitable arm that affects people in the counties that are connected, and the golf facilities that we have to put on a championship like Korn Ferry expects. Victoria National is a wonderful place. It's a great golf course. They have great people. It was just, you know, things happen and life moves on. I mean, we moved on with the senior LPGA last year. Was in Salina, Kansas. I'm sorry. And this year, another aspect, I'm not sure if you know this yet, coming up in the last week of June, the senior LPGA championship will be at Sultan's Run in Jasper, Indiana, which is 25 minutes away from us, or one of our marketing partners. So we still have some connection with that. We'll help their team out with whatever they need as far as marketing, as far as volunteers, as far as bodies for grounds crew and whatnot. So Southern Indiana in the next couple of years is going to have, well, right now we're going to have three professional championships with our place, Evansville and Jasper. Next year we'll have three more. So it's good. And the great thing about the Korn Ferry Tour for us and for Southern Indiana and for charities is that it comes with 4 days of Golf Channel, which is a great marketing tool, not only for us, but it could really put a good spotlight on not only the championship itself, but the region. And the region of Southern Indiana is really a goldmine of quality golf, and more importantly, quality people that put on the golf tournament. So,
for the Cook family, and you guys at French Lick, what is the marketing value of having professional golf tournaments at the resort? Does that mean it's an opportunity to showcase the resort nationally? Is that the importance? Is it being able to host potential VIPs and people who come in bring big groups? I mean, what ultimately is that kind of financial benefit that French Lick Resort can see as a result of hosting these events?
Well, if you look at an economic impact of hosting a professional golf tournament, whether it be an LPGA Epson Tour, whether it be the senior LPGA, the senior PGA Championship, which we hosted in 2015, as far as showing off the property. And we have a really unique property, and I go through it with our team. It's like, who are we, where we've come from, and where are we going? As far as a resort is concerned, we have 802 rooms. We have 180,000 square feet of meeting space. We have a casino. We have fabulous restaurants, fabulous spas. We have 45 holes of super, super golf. So as far as showing off the facility, not only to the golfers, which is great from, you know, April to November, it's fabulous. But we have to fill those holes come November, December, all the way through the first quarter of the year. And how do you do that? So do you showcase the hotel from a recreational side of a family getaway, a wedding, a class reunion, a corporate outing? And with the logistics of where we're located, we are a perfect drive-in market for probably 45% of the United States. So within about 6 hours of French Lick, if you draw a circle around it, you know, we're talking Milwaukee, Wisconsin, all the way down to Atlanta. We're talking, you know, West is close almost to Kansas City and as close as Virginia. So we're centrally located in the United States, where if we host a tournament and we show off these two unique properties, you know, what's it going to bring for the future, not only as visitors, but the region. So we have more to offer than the resort in Southern Indiana. We have, you know, wonderful lakes and different activities that people do all year round. And this is just one aspect of it all.
What does it mean to you personally to have seen how the resort has not only evolved, but also how its integration with professional golf has grown and evolved over the time you've worked with the resort?
Well, I started in 2008. My background was film and TV. It's obviously a family business. I have connections to the ownership. And from a personal side of growing up as a caddy, to be hanging out with these people I'm hanging now is pretty cool. I have three kids. I work out of my house. I travel a lot. To watch them grow up, to have this opportunity for me to work out of my home and do what I do, to bring it to this level, and to also have the backing of, you know, my director of golf, Dave Harner, and Joe Bezozo, Steve Ferguson, Chuck Franz, and Chris Leininger, just to go out and run and do it. Yeah, there's a lot of pride. Emotionally, if you look at how golf gives back, if you look at some of the Dave Harner always says, you know, we're changing lives. And I was sort of like taken back by it when I first started. Then I started to notice, not only from a day-to-day basis, if you look at what golf can do to a region like Southern Indiana, like the highest unemployment rate in the state of Indiana when I first came in there, to have a caddy program, which have successfully put, I think, 13 kids graduated already from college, and we just named two Evans Scholars for this year. To have a generation of people that have directly benefited from the efforts of the Cook Group in Southern Indiana, to see the successes, to see what the next generation has brought, to have, if you look back to the history of French Lick and where it was in the 90s, to where it was in the 2000s, to where we came in the 2010s roughly, and now we're in the 20s, to have two generations come through and have golf as a slingshot to change people's lives. Yeah, I've never really thought about it before, but yeah, it's pretty emotional. And I said one time to my son, Callahan, I said, hey man, we're just balls and sticks. And, you know, my job's pretty easy. I just talk about golf all day long. He goes, you let the world know that French Lick, Indiana exists, not only for Larry Bird, but he goes, Dad, you guys put kids through college. You have healthcare for these people. You have 401ks. And it's crazy that, you know, what Cook has done for French Lick and for what French Lick has done for the community. But not only that, if you look and see what the community has done for French Lick, it's a symbiotic relationship that will last for generations. I mean, we've been around since 1845, and there's no slowing down. So we're merely just, you know, pawns in this game of golf and French Lick. And yeah, it gets emotional, and it was weird. My dad passed away in 2012. I have a dear friend of mine, Ron Pearl. He's my mentor down here, and he was like my emotional crutch. And we had the Big Ten championships. And I was talking to Ron before the championships. He goes, one day you're going to realize when you pick up the phone, your dad's not there, and it's going to hit you up inside of the head like a 2x4. And we wrapped up the 2012 Big Ten championships. Thomas Peters won it from University of Illinois. And I was riding down the fairway, picking up signs and whatnot. And I grabbed my phone and I called my dad, and I was like, oh, shit. And that was it. So, yeah, there's a lot of emotions that go into my job. It seems simple, but I have the backing of great teammates. I have a wonderful family. My wife is amazing, and she gets it. She goes, you know, I was gone when we first started. I was gone all the time. I missed a lot of things with my kids. But now it's back, and now they're getting ready to move on. So it's quite a Harry Chapin part of my life. So, yeah, thanks for an easy layup question, Ryan.
You know, I like to ask the softball ones, you know.
Yeah.
The good news is that another generation of people and professional golfers are going to get to enjoy French Lick Resort. They're going to get to see it on TV. Hopefully people will come and experience it for themselves. And also, you're going to get to help another generation of people in Southern Indiana through this tournament and the Epson Tour event. And that's great stuff. And I can't wait to come back and see what's new with the resort. Experience it again, because it's one of my favorite happy places in the world, and always happy to tell people about it and talk about it with you.
Awesome, my brother. This is great. We're a big fan of Golf News Net, and for you who've not listened to Golf News Net before, welcome to the sole source of all your golf needs. How's that?
And we'll also emotionally wrench you every now and then too, just the way the world works. So. Sorry about that, Brendan, but that was awesome, and I appreciate it.
Well, you know, it's pretty cool, man. It's a neat thing, and you know, I look back at you know where it all started, and I have no idea where it's going to end up. But the only thing that we could do is be stewards of a really cool place, and keep it for the next generation, and look 10 years down the road, and who knows what's going to happen? I mean, you're looking at big tournaments. You're looking at Ryder Cup. You're looking at U.S. Open stuff. And they're looking at, you know, 2045 for the next tournament. So we're happy to do the Corn Ferry and be, you know, be the stepping stone of future golf, not only through the Epson Tour, but with the Corn Ferry Tour. I mean, how many guys haven't played on the Corn Ferry Tour, or how many ladies haven't played on the Epson Tour that are now on tour now? So we'll always have a place for them, and they're always welcome to return. And if any of these players are listening out there and you're flying high in your G5s that we're watching on Full Swing right now, eating your caviar and drinking your champagne, we got a 5,000-foot runway. So if you're booking across the country, just park your ass at our place for a while. Should be good.
Well, Brendan, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us. And can't wait to see you again in French Lick very soon.
Peace out, my brother.
Thanks to Brendan for spending some time with me last week. We're going to do it again. Actually, we're going to go to Ireland together at the end of August, the beginning of September. That's a little bit of a low-key announcement. So we're going to go with our friends from Ireland. We're going to go over there and experience Irish golf for a week. And then we're going to wrap up our trip at the Horizon Irish Open, which is going to be so exciting. My wife and I went to Ireland and Northern Ireland just about a decade ago, before we were, well, 11 years ago now, we were starting to think about having children, and we wanted to go on a vacation that we might not otherwise be able to do for a while once we have kids. And we both wanted to go to Europe, and we both made the choice to go to Ireland in February, the weekend of the Super Bowl, when we flew over there. And it's one of my favorite places. I mean, I have a lot of favorite places, but I could live in Ireland. I could live in Northern Ireland. The people there are so wonderful. it's just a different vibe of a place. It's a different world than America, and one I love. I love Dublin. I loved Belfast. I loved Killarney. But I didn't get to play any golf on that trip. And now I'm going to get to experience Irish golf with a good buddy and share all of that with you. We'll do it on social and through video content, written content. So hopefully you'll enjoy that. But for the conversation I had with Brendan, getting to talk about French Lick, a place we have bonded over the years, was really cool. Hope you enjoyed this week's show. We'll be back with another show next week. We'll talk a little bit about the Valspar. I'm sure some other dramatic things will come up naturally. That's just kind of how golf seems to be these days. And we'll have plenty to talk about together. If you want to leave a review for the show and you subscribe to Apple Podcasts, that'd be great. Or on Spotify, 5 stars help on both services. Helps us reach more people. If you want to email me, I'm ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com over email. Or at Ryan Ballingy on Twitter or Instagram. To a degree, Facebook. You can find me on those places. And happy to talk with you there. Until next week, I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.